Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
If you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free show on 3CR at 1 p.m. every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, stories of recovery from addictive behaviour, Thursdays at 1 p.m. on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to center myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial and 3CR on digital radio. Hi, I'm Bill, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. I'd like to pay my respects to the elders past and present, and to acknowledge that this land was stolen, that sovereignty was never ceded. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives.
Hi, today's show is a replay of a program that we recorded back in April 2020, and it's with Drew from Gamblers Anonymous, and I hope you enjoy it.
This week I'm interviewing Drew via a Zoom recording, so welcome to the show, Drew.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Drew's a compulsive gambler, recovering with the help of Gamblers Anonymous, and he's going to be talking about his journey of recovery. So, Drew, we usually start talking about, you know, growing up and things in the family, going to school, things that influenced us, and sort of what led us down the path of gambling. So what was life like for you growing up?
So probably a pretty ordinary sort of growing up, I suppose, just in a social sense. So in terms of friends and family and support networks, relatively normal. I think probably a little bit of a different situation with my parents in terms of them being together but not living together in a sense. So I sort of spent most of my time with mum during the week and then with my dad on the weekends, and mum was there as well. So and being an only child as well in that just throws a bit of a different dynamic into it. So that was probably something that's not typical for everyone growing up, but just in terms of my social circles were pretty normal, I'd say. Probably just a little bit of tumultuous period, I suppose, in early high school. Just had to go on some medication for some Roaccutane, I suppose, and then at that point, I think I sort of found myself a little bit disillusioned with school and with the way things were going, and maybe not too different to some teenagers as well. I know we all sort of go through that period, and sort of found myself missing a year of school and then going back into high school, and from there, it was all pretty relatively normal, I'd say, just a rocky period there. Yep.
Yeah. So were you a good student?
Look, I think my report card would generally always say Drew is capable of a lot more than he puts out there. So yes and no, I think. So there were probably times there where when I applied myself, I could produce really good stuff. But a lot of the times it was just going through the sort of bare minimum to get things done, I think. Yep.
Yeah. Was that because you weren't interested or didn't care?
To a degree, I wasn't interested. I was more interested in the social aspect of school. For me, it was about just going there and spending time with your mates. It was really attraction for me. I loved that time out that we had. It's recess or lunch or kicking the footy or whatever we were doing that wasn't sort of directly related to education, I suppose. So it wasn't the learning aspect that so much attracted me to school, but more of the social thing. So probably just trying to get away with what I could just to get through, I think.
Okay. So what about friendship groups?
Yeah, so as I was alluded to earlier, just with going from missing that sort of year in high school, so going from transitioning from primary school to high school, I sort of, most of my friends, for whatever reason, were in the year below me. So I didn't really adjust to high school that well, that considered, and sort of went through a few years and, as I said, didn't really enjoy it that much. And then, you know, when I missed a year of high school, went back into it, year 11 and 12 VCE, I was with those sort of people that were the year below me, and just had a much better time with that. And those people are still my sort of close friends to this day. So, it all worked out for the best, I think. But, yeah, just a bit of a windy path to get there, I think.
Yeah, okay. So what about relationship with girls and things?
So I probably, to a degree, thought I was, maybe a little bit too cool for some of those things just throughout high school. So I sort of had little bits and pieces happening here and there, but nothing really serious. And it probably spoke to my lack of emotional maturity about those sort of things throughout that period. And then, as I sort of got on and left school, felt more comfortable, I suppose, in terms of committing in a relationship and understanding what a relationship's about, and those sort of things. And, I've made some great long-term relationships from that.
Okay. So when did you start gambling, and what was the attraction?
Yeah, so I probably started gambling first when I was about 15 or 16. Initially it was just probably like a lot of young guys, you sort of go to the TAB with your friends and just put $5 on a race here or on a sporting event there and that sort of thing, and it's all a little bit of fun. And that probably continued and it sort of slowly escalated, I think, just throughout me growing up, and probably it was a slow deterioration, I suppose I'd describe it as. But I didn't really think much of it in the first, maybe 5 or 6 years, because I was still sort of living at home and didn't have a lot of responsibility, I suppose. So it didn't, I wasn't caused, there was no reason for me to take accountability for it.
Yeah. So what sort of gambling did you enjoy?
So predominantly sports was my favourite thing, it was initially it was sort of sports, but then it'd just be anything at the end of the in the depths of my addiction, just totally anything. I say sport, when I say sport I mean sport, and I suppose I'm thinking back in terms of the depths of my addiction, an average day might look something like, say it was a Friday night, I'd, come home from work and I'd have a pun on the footy or the rugby, and then I'd sort of go to sleep. I woke up the next morning and I'd usually play football in the winter. And that morning, without fail, every morning I was down there at the TAB punting on the baseball that would invariably happen before that and during, when footy was on, and also put some bets on for the footy in the afternoon. So it turned from, baseball in the morning to, when I'd finished footy to, baseball, more baseball in the afternoon, football in the afternoon, then it'd be rugby in the afternoon, and then, football again, and, whatever sport was on. And it sort of often it got to the point where, I'd be up till 4 or 5 in the morning just on some ridiculous European basketball league I didn't know absolutely anything about, other than there was 2 teams playing and I could put money on it. And that was just I have some really dark memories of that, just a terrible place to be, just in terms of thinking that, the night out that you didn't have, or, the money that you lost that you otherwise would have spent on something much more meaningful than gambling. Very vivid memories of those sorts of experiences.
Yeah. So what was the attraction to betting on sports you didn't necessarily understand?
Well, I think it was sort of just desperation to an extent, really. You probably want to punt on something that you have some sort of idea about, but I suppose at the end of the day, all compulsive gamblers Obviously, have no idea because they start punting in the first place, and you know, we all end up in the same place, regardless of what you punt on or what you think or who you are, or you know, you all end up in the same spot. So it was just a matter of, I think, yeah, just being desperate, really, at the end of the day. And you know, you're just chasing and chasing and chasing something that you know, sometimes you might get something back, but at the end of the day, yeah, there was never a bet big enough. There was never money enough for you to say, okay, yep, I'm comfortable and I'll stop now. You just if you won more, you bet more, and if you lost, you just chased it. So yeah, yeah. You always end up in the same spot.
Yeah. So it's often, people often talk about filling the void. So what was it filling in you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been trying to figure that myself for a while. I remember when I first sort of went into GA and sort of, you know, wanted to fix the damage I've done, essentially. And, you know, I remember the period sort of abstaining after that, and just the minutes, the seconds, they just go by so slow. And I'd sit around thinking, what the hell am I doing with all this time on my hands now? You know, like, how am I filling this void? Otherwise, it used to be spent, you know, maybe 8, 10, 12, even more hours a day punting. I'm sort of sitting around going, well, if I'm not going to do that, like, what else am I going to do? You know, like, I've already been to the gym. You know, you sort of start thinking to yourself, well, what do normal people actually do? It's a really, really, really strange experience. I definitely remember feeling that very much. I was like, well, how do I fill this thing that essentially I've created an identity out of such a long period of time, and now it's stripped away from me? How do I spend my hours? How do I fill my time? So the struggle for me wasn't so much what the void that gambling was filling, it was when you took gambling away, the void that was there, that was left. How do I sort of fill that? Because I largely felt that I lived a relatively normal life in terms of what I did, and you know, in relation to, you know, my friends and those you know, people I knew, I did very similar things. You know, we lived very similar lives, but with those sort of quiet hours and the downtime hours where I sort of would always spend you know, gambling, where, I don't know, they'd watch TV or read a book or, you know, learn Spanish or, you know, play an instrument or that sort of thing. Just things I just didn't have a clue about.
Yeah. So once you left school and started working, did gambling impact on the work at that point, or was it still in the background?
Yeah, so it probably took a little while, I think, for it to take hold. So while I was still sort of living at home, and I did personal training after I finished high school initially, and it had a little bit of an impact there, but not something I didn't think too much about. It was really only when I got to the corporate world, and you know, I ended up studying psychology after I finished personal training and got into a role in employee engagement, which I enjoyed very much and look back on very fondly, which sort of gave me the start to my corporate career. But it was more there where it sort of really, it really escalated, I think, just in terms of the impact that it had on me. You know, that, you know, the time you spend at the desk, and the, you know, your responsibilities are much higher, and you know, the culture and the environment sort of goes with that. There's a certain expectation that you're always presenting well, and you know, you're always delivering great quality work, and you have great relationships with people, and that's always something that I wanted to do and I cared about very much. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, gambling just it became more important sometimes. You know, people often say that, you know, you in the depths of your gambling addiction, you'll do anything to feed it, and that was absolutely true. You know, there were definitely points in there that were there was nothing more important than gambling, and that showed, you know, in my sort of concentration levels and the quality of work that I produced. Invariably, it would come back to bite me, but not so much in the sense that I lost my job over it. You know, I was always sort of quite good at hiding it, but you know, I knew that it really did, you know, inhibit things that I was capable of.
Yeah. So what sort of things? How did it impact on your work? Was it just the thinking about it, or was there more, did you actually leave work to gamble, or what was the impact on the work?
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned leaving work to gamble, and that was something that I'd do quite often. You know, I'd sort of say, oh, going out for lunch or whatever it was. And, you know, you'd rarely spend as much time gambling as you want. You know, you go in there and say, oh, I just popped in there for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and, you know, an hour later you're still there. And that was absolutely me a lot of the time, and that meant that I had to, you know, work later at night or start earlier in the morning, you know, to make up for that shortfall. And obviously that had a snowball impact on whether it was my, you know, social engagements or relationships and those sort of things, where I sort of had to make up things that, you know, fundamentally weren't true, because the reality was, you know, I was gambling and that was losing me time and money, and you know, I'd spend working hours to do it. You know, there were absolutely times where I had to do that, many times. You know, particularly remember a time we used to get paid monthly, or I'm sure they still do get paid monthly, but you know, at the end of the financial year party, there was the financial year party was on a Friday night, and on Thursday night we got paid, and Friday was just sort of an easy day where you just sort of a bit of work in the morning, and then at lunchtime, you know, you'd sort of sit around, have a chat, and sort of sum up the financial year, and then you know, begin the sort of festivities from there. And yeah, I remember that night there was a footy game on the Thursday night, and I'd sort of gone to punt on that and lost, and then, you know, one thing turned to another, and you know, all of a sudden I'm at the casino at, you know, 4 a.m. Lost every dollar I've got, and knowing that I have to front up to work the next day, and just put on this front that everything was fine, you know, that everything was okay, and that I didn't blow my whole paycheck in a number of hours, you know, that pretend that I was happy and everything was cool, was just it was really heartbreaking for me. It was just a very difficult thing to get through, and I wish I could say it was the only time that those sort of events occurred, but the reality was it wasn't. You know, it's just something that one of them that I remember quite vividly, just having to present that, put that facade on for people that, you know, I work with and I cared about and, you know, had a lot of respect for, essentially just lying to them about, you know, what reasons why I don't have any money, or why, you know, I have to leave, or whatever it might be. But yeah, emotionally, you know, those sort of things definitely took their toll.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we might take a short break.
Our first song is called Roller Coaster Ride, a recent release by easy listening pop country artist Dallas Atkins, and it's courtesy of Australian Music Radio Airplay Project.
accent to women.
It seems so obvious to me that if you live in a completely violent cultural milieu, that it's going to translate into every aspect of women's lives.
Accent to women.
What's a border? They don't see it like a big wall right along the...
How can people live ordinary lives when they're living in such an extraordinary situation where there are two, where there are armies there and terrorists there and such conflict every single day of their lives?
Accent to Women.
A show by and about women from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds.
Every Monday from 11 a.m. on Community Radio 3CR.
Welcome back. This is the Living Free Show on 3CR. 855 kHz on your AM dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, you can find them on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone, email or Twitter.
Today I'm talking about compulsive gambling with Drew, and we're talking about recovery through Gamblers Anonymous. So Drew, we talked about sort of getting into gambling, but when does it really start to impact you, and what's the point when you have to take notice?
Yep. Yes, good question. I suppose there's a few stages that sort of go with that. So initially, and I think probably most people walking into GA for the first time would say the same thing, that you get found out for whatever reason, whether it's usually your significant other, but it could be some other one of your other family members, or someone that you care about a lot and cares about you. And for me, in that instance, it was my mum. So sort of living with her at the time, and I'd sort of done a few things that I wasn't particularly proud of, just in terms of taking money from her or stealing money from her, I guess, essentially, that I'd say to pay back that I never would, or her unknowingly, or me taking money from her unknowingly just to feed the addiction, and getting found out. It's just, it's a really difficult sort of gutting feeling, because you spend a lot of the time just in denial, essentially, that that you do have an issue in the first place, and that you say it's not impacting other areas of your life, but it always is on some level or another. And certainly for me, the catalyst for me to go to GA in the first place was certainly the damage that I'd done in terms of my relationship with my mum, and the money that I'd taken from her, and just being her and me in the household as well, just made it, I suppose, all the more unpleasant, I suppose, when it was bad. And there was a long period of me just denying it, just flat out denying that it ever happened, that I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And it took a lot for me to actually come clean. I think that was the beginning of the process, I suppose, for me seeking help in the first place.
Yeah. So did you go straight to GA?
So Mum and I sort of talked about some ways that I could get me some help. And so a few of those were, counselling sessions and or psychologists and I think hypnotherapy and those sort of things. But I found that those didn't largely work for me. But then walking into GA for the first time, I eventually came to that conclusion, just because it was something that that I was aware of that existed. There was probably a bit of stigma attached to it in terms of, what is GA all about, and I don't want to be associated with these bunch of desperate loser compulsive gamblers. I'm not like them. That's not me at all. But then when you get in there and you get to see everyone and understand that effectively we're all in the same position, and we've all followed a very similar path just in terms of the way that gambling has impacted us all. And certainly the first ever place that I got to where I just felt like everyone understood, you all had this common understanding of what compulsive gambling was all about. A lot of people in GA talk about that, when they go in there, that's where they were looking into a mirror. It's absolutely true. You hear a lot of the same things that people say that you think, experiences that you've lived. And there's just something really comforting about that, knowing that you're sort of trying to work through it all together. And, you know, I don't doubt that that was my absolute savior. I mean, there was, you know, other things that weren't working for me, and I tried, you know, cold turkey and bizarre types of therapies as well. It just didn't have that sort of connection and sort of impetus that GA has. And it's just been, yeah, really, really special for me. And, you know, look, it's not my first time trying to recover, and, you know, it's my fifth crack at it now. But, you know, it's just, you learn, for me, I learn a little bit more each time, and I get a little bit better each time, you know, and the relationships that I have there with the people to all understand what we're all going through, you know, is something that really helps get me through. You know, I wouldn't have, you'd turn around and look, you know, when I first confronted that I had an issue, that I wouldn't have said, well, there's no way I could go a week without gambling. I couldn't go an hour without gambling. So how the hell was I going to do a week or a month or a year? You know, it wasn't possible. It didn't seem possible. But yeah, absolutely it is. And yeah, I'm just very thankful of finding GA.
Yeah. So what did you understand about gambling the first time you went? What was different?
In the first time that I went to GA.
Look,
the first time I went in was probably more, I didn't say a lot. I probably just sat there and just tried to take it all in, and you know, to an extent, probably, you know, as I say, that sort of stigma of like, who are all these people, you know, these compulsive gamblers, these losers. I'm not like one of them. But it's funny, you're exactly like all of them. You're all like each other. Not, you know, we're not losers by any extent, but that's just the stigma that sort of goes with it. So for me, it was just sort of really coming to understand that no one judges you there. You know, you walk in there and everyone understands you're fighting the same battle, you know, which is a really heartening thing, I suppose, to see as well, just the success that people do have in the program. You know, you hear stories about people having, you know, abstinence and recovery for, you know, 20, 30 years, and they solely attribute that to following the GA program and just doing that exactly as the book says. So, you know, for me, it was sort of just coming to that realization that, well, like this can happen, and people do it, and they're living proof. You know, it's the evidence is right here in front of you. And yeah, that's something that I certainly took a lot of comfort in. And obviously, you know, it's still obviously a learning process for me, and it's taken a lot of time to build up my understanding of really what the damage that gambling has done to me emotionally more than it is financially. You know, I think everyone goes in there thinking it's a financial issue when you first go in, but at the end of the day, it's not. It's just the financial issue is a reason why you're going in there, but it's not the reason why you gambled in the first place. And you know, it's not the solution to fixing it. You know, it's the emotional damage that you've got to repair.
Yeah. So if it's not the financial, why do people gamble? What is it?
Yeah, look, I think there's a few sort of traits of compulsive gamblers, and, you know, I'm sort of no exception to this as well. It's, you know, it's, I think there's something about, like, I'm a quite a competitive person, and, you know, I don't like to lose. You know, I don't like to lose. And if you don't like to lose, but you like to gamble, you're probably in the wrong space there. So I think that, yeah, a lot of people sort of have that mentality that, you know, I can beat the system, or I'm different to that person. You know, I'm above that. I'm better than that. You know, it's my way of doing it. You know, but it's funny, no matter who you are or where you come from, how much money you have, what your situation is, gambling does not discriminate. You know, we all end up in the same place, exactly the same place at the end of the day. That you know, we lose absolutely everything. You know, it's our relationships, our money. You know, we got creditors coming after us. You know, our social circles break down. You know, all of those things, you know, really suffer badly from gambling. And a lot of it is around sort of escaping, I think, as well. Just that, you know, escaping that emotional aspect that. That you just don't want to confront, or you're not mature enough to confront. You know, I spoke a little bit about the lack of emotional maturity that I had when I was younger, and certainly, you know, gambling was a great enabler for that, because I didn't have to take responsibility for anything. You know, I was very impulsive and impatient, and I wanted to win, and, you know, not a lot of things that I really cared about, really. But gambling was, you know, was one of those. It's sort of like you sort of create this identity around gambling, which, you know, is crazy, because at the end of the day, when it all comes crashing down, you realize that gambling is the reason that's led you down to the dark place that you're in, and your identity is taken from you. You think, well, who am I? You know, and that's certainly been something that personally is very difficult for me to been able to overcome. It's just understanding who am I without gambling, because I've spent so much of my life doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So what's it like to realize that you can't trust yourself in a gambling sense? How do you reconcile that?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's it's very easy and it's very difficult at the same time. You know, I sort of tried to synthesize what that would look like, I suppose, just in terms of, you know, and how it's impacted my relationships. You know, and at the end of the day, really, it's, if gambling's in my life, you can't trust me with anything. And the sole reason being that I will do anything to feed that addiction, because I'm a compulsive gambler. But if gambling's not part of my life, then you can trust me with absolutely anything. I'm a totally different person. And, you know, I think many people who've been through GA and who are compulsive gamblers would certainly attest to that. You know, it makes you do things you thought, oh, that's very uncharacteristic of me. That's not something that's in me, but you don't think it is. But it's, you know, it's the addiction that causes you to do those sort of things. You know, you'll do anything to feed it. So, so it's difficult and it's easy at the same time. So, you know, and I know, if I don't have gambling in my life, you know, I'm totally fine. Everything is going to be 100% easier to do. I can actually deal with things, and I can work through things. I can think about things. I can give things my full attention. Whereas if gambling's in my life, you know, I know that there's every aspect of my life that suffers to some degree.
Yeah. So what's it like to have a break, you know, start gambling again, and then have to go back to GA? What's it feel like?
Yeah, that was probably one of the most confronting things for me. I think I mentioned earlier, it's my fifth time recovering now, and certainly going back is very, very difficult thing. I think when you go into GA, and, you know, you sort of get to know those people and understand what they've been through, and they share their experiences and you share your experience, you feel like you have this sort of connection, this bond where you sort of, you don't want to let yourselves but each other down. And just going in there after a bus, it's really, really hard. Yeah, it breaks my heart. Really difficult thing to do. And I struggle with that every single time that I went back after a bust. And it got harder and harder the more times I busted, the harder it got each time, you know, because the first time I sort of went in just wanting to fix my financial problems, and then I thought, oh, I'm above this, I can sort of do it myself, cold turkey and all that sort of stuff. Then you come back and, you know, you sort of think, oh, okay, well, maybe there's a little bit more to it, and you sort of get more pieces of the puzzle as you go. But, you know, you also build up those relationships with those people as well, you know, and they sort of get a perception of you. And, you know, I think the thing is as well, you sort of think that if you think that everyone's, you might have this perception that people are judging you, but they're actually not. You know, no one in GA judges each other, because, you know, at the end of the day, we all know that we're fighting a battle for life, you know, and compulsive gambling is not something that you win. You just you just continue to fight the battles and push through and help each other through. And, you know, you can't judge someone because, you know, that could be you the next day, you know, it really could be. And there's no telling what's around the corner that can actually bring you to do those things. But it does happen. You know, I've seen people, certainly through GA, who've had 20 plus years up of abstinence, and it just disappeared just like that. You know, and that's a real stark reminder that, you know, you need to absolutely be adhering to the program as much as you possibly can, because you know, once you have those little chinks in your armor, you know, you just got to make sure that you do have the right things in place to be able to defend against them, because it's amazing the damage it can do in a really short period of time. You know, it really is incredible. And every time I come back, and this is spoken about a lot about the meetings as well, you know, every time you come back after a bust, you think you've hit rock bottom. But little do you know, the next time you bust, it's a lower bottom, and it just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, it's really an endless pit. It's an endless pit of misery, that just keeps going. And it's amazing how you can tell yourself you understand it, but, you really can't until you live it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure I've heard in AA, they talk about, you know, every rock bottom's got a basement.
Absolutely. I have to absolutely agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but to come back, you've got to admit it to yourself first before you come in. So what's it like admitting it to yourself?
Yeah, that's right. And that's the thing that I think is really difficult, especially after you've got a certain period of time up. You sort of think that, you know, maybe you've got to a point where you know, it's easier, and you can deal with it a bit more. You can deal with it a bit easier, and you've got different ways of managing it. But then, you know, when you wake up the next morning, and I do remember this several times, waking up the next morning after a bus, thinking, oh, I can't even believe this is real. I can't even believe that I woke up the previous day, and gambling wasn't even in my mind remotely, and now I'm waking up the next day knowing that I've gambled, and I could not bring myself to go back there straight away. You know, I could not bring myself to admit it to myself, or to know that I've let those people down, in GA as well as myself. So invariably I just started gambling again, and just going into the exact same habits that I had before. You know, the amounts of bets were the same, the compulsion was the same, the time and energy and effort I spent to it was like I was just like that. All that time was just out the window. It's incredible how quickly it can change, you know, and you can never underestimate that. And yeah, that was a really, really difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we might take another break.
The next song we have is I Got Mine, another recent release, this time by urban pop folk rock duo Ali Rowe, courtesy of Australian Music Radio Airplay Project, and it's from February 2024.
Got your job in 98, moved your wife from interstate, had two kids before you stopped to think. Over time, all went wrong, she packed the suitcase, they were gone, now you would take away your brother's sink. Head between your elbows, your mind is in a fog, thinking about the gallows, but who will feed the dog? You're seven figures living higher life, you're working 9 to 5 and no time.
Consumer law touches on many aspects of what we do every day. Consumer Action Law Centre has lawyers, financial counsellors and policy experts who specialise in issues such as unfair contract terms and deceptive or dodgy business practices, like excessive pricing or irresponsible lending. Consumer Action Law Centre provides free legal information and advice and pursues litigation on behalf of consumers experiencing disadvantage across Victoria. Consumer Action Law Centre currently focuses on getting justice for people who have been sold lemon cars, ripped off by insurance companies, scammed and denied help from their bank, or refused hardship concessions from telecommunications and energy companies. Find out how Consumer Action Law Centre can help you at consumeraction.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
Tune in to Done by Law.
An informal and irreverent look at the law. Critical insights and analysis from diverse community perspectives.
Done by Law, 6 p.m. Tuesdays.
Welcome back. This is the Living Free Show on 3CR Digital Radio, live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming.
And I'm talking to Drew about recovering from compulsive gambling with the help of Gamblers Anonymous. So Drew, we're talking about being in and out of Gamblers Anonymous, and you know, sort of going back to gambling. So, what's sort of the process that leads you to becoming a bit more relaxed in GA that you start gambling again?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing that I found to be probably the biggest challenge. It was just that sort of being content and being complacent about where you are. It's sort of like you forget how bad things can be. You know, I've said this a couple of times at the meetings, but you know, if you could just bottle up all the pain and suffering and misery that you feel when you walk in GA for the first time, and you can take a sip of that every time you felt like gambling, you'd never gamble again. But unfortunately, you can't do that, you know, and sometimes your brain is a bit of a short-term memory in that regard, you know, and it's just that sort of thought that, well, you know, having a bet, well, how much damage can it actually do? You know, it's just one bet. Doesn't matter all that much. But, you know, one bet's not one bet. You know, and I remember the first time that the complacency really got me, it was just so innocuous. I mean, I'd had probably, well, over a year abstinence, and gambling was the furthest thing from my mind, you know. But I'd knocked off work early for whatever reason. I was walking past a venue, and I remember I saw some basketball playing there, and I just thought, oh, okay, well, that's on this afternoon. I can sort of go home and watch that, and you know, maybe I'll make that interesting, you know. And I thought about it for about 30 seconds. I thought, well, I've been off it for this long, and you know, I feel okay now. I haven't really thought about gambling at all, so you know, maybe I can go back to being a normal person, just gamble like normal people do, just socially. And that was absolutely the wrong answer. You know, that just started the spiral again. You know, it was funnily enough, you know, I remember I won that bet, and it was a significant amount of money that I put on there. But I just didn't stop. It was like, I've got to go again, you know. And I found myself back there the very next day, and all the work and energy and effort I put in, it's just like it never existed. You know, so as I say, it was just sort of, you forget how bad it can actually be. And then that, you know, months of gambling and just ended in financial ruin. And as I said, a new lower bottom, you know, the rock bottom basement, as you called it. It was exactly that. And it was something that, you know, I remember I woke up the next day and I thought, well, you know, how can this be? How could I have done this? And then I sort of just denied it for months and months, and things just got worse and worse. And you know, it spiraled out of control again. And it took me a long time to go back into GA. And then when I did get back in there, and I knew that was the right thing to do. I knew that all along, but I just had a really difficult time admitting to myself that I'd actually done what I'd done. And then going back there and knowing, because I'd stopped going to the GA meetings, you know. I just thought to myself, well, not that I'm cured, but, you know, I don't need this anymore. There are other things that are more important in my life. There's time that I'd rather be spending doing something else than being a GA. And that's generally what I thought. I certainly don't think that these days, and I know how important it is to keep on top of things. You know, it's a constant, you know, it's a battle that you have to fight all the time, and you have to be hyper aware of, you know. And there were little things that sort of got to me, you know, that I didn't realize that were breaking me down, you know. Things like playing fantasy football and fantasy cricket, and, you know, you'd be watching something and, you know, the gambling ads would come on the TV or the radio or a billboard, and, you know, there were just so many things that I thought I'd just let them wash over me. It doesn't matter, you know, I'm impervious to that sort of stuff. But yeah, I've come to understand that those things, that they just break it down. They just plant the seed that the gambling's there, and it's an option, and you can do it. But the reality is I can't have that in my life. If I want to give myself a chance to be happy, then I can't have gambling in my life. It's pretty much as simple as that. So everything that involves gambling, I just have to cut out, you know, without question.
Yeah. So in GA, there's a lot of people who've got a lot of experience. So what's it like sort of tapping into that experience?
Yeah, that's a fantastic resource to have. You know, those people, as I say, it's really heartening to see those people and the success stories that they've had over such a long period of time. But the funny thing is, and there's a long-time GA member that I seen at Carlton a lot of times in the past, and he's sort of moved away now, but you know, he remember he told a story about a guy, I think, when he was because he was, you know, had very bad compulsive gambling issues, and I think at the sort of start of his recovery period, he was speaking to a guy who was working in the same industry as him, and the guy had everything, you know. He had the nice cars and the nice houses, and he was very happy, peaceful, you know, loving guy, just, you know. And he was absolutely in awe of him. He asked him, just, you know, can you tell me, like, what's the secret? What's the secret to all of this, you know? And he said, the secret is there is no secret. It's just hard work, perseverance and patience, you know. And that's essentially what recovery is about. You know, you've really got to persist, and if you live the program through the program the way it's supposed to be done, not your way, because I've seen people, and I've been guilty of it myself certainly, trying to have their own sort of version of the program, and once you start doing that, you mess with the formula, and things don't work out the way they were intended, and it doesn't work. So as long as you follow the program and do the things that you're meant to do and exactly what the book says, you'll achieve continued recovery, you know. And that's what these people have done. That's what they say. That's what they all say. So I did what the book said, and I've kept doing that, and I keep going to meetings, and I don't become complacent, because I come here, you know, every week or a couple of times a week, and I hear the stories from people. I understand the things that they've been through. I've been there myself, you know, and it's the different experiences that people share, whether they're new to GA or, you know, they've been there for, you know, 20, 30 years. Everyone's got a story to tell, and there's always, you know, some really stark reminders in there, and people say, you know, it's about getting your medicine, and absolutely it is. It's about feeding off those people as well, and the things that they're going through, and to an extent it's things not to do, you know. You learn what to do as much as what not to do, and you see what doesn't work for people, and that's a fantastic resource as well, you know. There's something you can learn off everyone at GA, and I think that's just a really fantastic way to think about it, is just to draw off every resource you can, because there's plenty of people in there with different experiences and different takes on things and varying degrees of success.
Yeah. The other thing is the understanding that it's basically a chronic illness.
isn't it? It's the same addiction process as AA, except without the allergy. So you're not allergic to the alcohol, but once you start, the mental process kicks in and you repeat the pattern. And so it's understanding that your thinking has a problem with that process, and that you can't enter that game, if you like, because your thinking will lead you down one path.
Yeah, absolutely, that's right. As I sort of touched on before, it's you can do as much work as you like, but at the end of the day, I could have 20, and I've seen this and heard it before in GA as well. You know, I can have, and there was one example there. I see a guy, I think he had 21 years up or something like that, and he blew every cent that he had saved in those 21 years in 6 hours.
Wow.
You know, just it's incredible the amount of damage that it can do in such a short period of time, you know, and it's amazing. You just go back to being that old compulsive gambler that you were. That part never leaves you. Whatever type of compulsive gambler you were when you were in the depths of your gambling addiction is invariably what you'll return to whenever you do start gambling. You know, there's no two ways around that. It might take, you know, a period of time to escalate to get back to that level, but it does always get back to that level. You know, I can say I've seen that a lot of times at GA, and myself personally, absolutely no exception. You just go straight back into it, and it's amazing that the stranglehold that it has on you. You know, it's sort of like a silent killer in a way. Just in terms of the damage it does to people, that's not often visible. You know, you can see alcoholics, and you can see drug addicts, but the visibility of it is just not there. But the damage that it's doing emotionally, like if you strip back what a compulsive gambler looked like emotionally, if you could see emotions of different types of addicts, I have no doubt that you know, gambling addicts, they would look absolutely horrible. They'd look horrible. You don't see it, and therefore people, they don't think about it as much. It's much easier to sweep under the rug. And you know, compulsive gamblers, they don't help themselves in a sense that, you know, we lie and cheat and steal and do anything we can to feed the addiction, which doesn't bring into the fore of getting people to understand that it's a really massive issue. And in Australia, it's a huge issue. It's a huge issue that, you know, it's almost taboo for, you know, the government to talk about any sense of any real help. You know, those tokenistic sort of gamble responsively messages at the bottom of the ads. I mean, it's just absolutely mental the way that it's accepted for being what it is, when they know the level of damage that it can do. They know full well the level of damage it can do. And there's, you know, just about everyone around knows someone who's affected by gambling. Whether they know the extent of it, probably not. But the fact of the matter is it's there, and it will come to the surface at some point.
Yep. All right, yep. Personal experience, yeah. The other thing is, I wanted to talk about was relationships. So how much better are your relationships now that you're in GA than they were before?
Yeah, oh, they're 100% better. The thing that I found the most noticeable is just the ability to, look, you need a bit of time up for this to be able to kick in, but just the ability to be able to be present in a conversation, you know, not thinking about your next bet or your last bet or where your next dollar is coming from or what the score is, you know, on your phone or anything like that, because, you know, that they just cheapen all these social interactions you have, whether it's your relationship with your partner or your friends or your family or whoever it might be. It's just something that you can't really put a price on, that because you're allowed to sort of form these deep relationships where you can sort of let someone in to understand you fully. Because at the end of the day, if you're a compulsive gambler, you do everything you can to hide a lot of the things that you do. And you know you're doing that because you don't want someone to find out about, you know, who you really are. And that's the really tragic part of it. You know, you make an identity out of gambling to an extent, and you don't want people to know about that, but yet you're trying to form a deep relationship with someone, and you won't really let them in. So how can you expect them to let you in? You know, it's something that you can't really build those things properly when gambling's in your life. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah. So it's all about honesty and trust.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. If there's anybody out there who'd like to find out a bit more about Gamblers Anonymous, then you can phone them in Victoria on 03 9696 6108, or you can go online at gaaustralia.org.au and you get more information there, and you get some local phone numbers and meeting lists. That's about all we've got time for today. So I'd like to thank Drew for coming in and recording this for us today, and sharing his gambling recovery story with us.
No problem. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
I hope you'll be able to join us again next week when we'll feature another recovery program. This time it'll be Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you can join me.
Coming up next, we have Bell & Wah, The Spirit of Wah, hosted by Uncle Tall Jim Choco Edwards. Join Uncle Choco in The Spirit of Wah on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarn. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
And to take us out, we've got a song called Frangelico Dreams by Gabriella Cohen off her Blue No More album from January 2022. Hope you enjoy it.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.